And he had no response. Celino either, for that matter. A tense pause followed. Since Chain could think of no intelligent retort, he grew hot, too, and decided he would get Crank's license plate number and lie in ambush somewhere, maybe catch him speeding or sneaking through a stop sign. Pull him over, wait for a sarcastic comment, yank him out, sprawl him across the hood while cars eased by, slap the handcuffs on him, haul him to jail. Such pleasant thoughts made Treen smile. Celino, however, was not smiling. He'd heard the rumors about Luther Crank and his goofy plans for Christmas. Frohmeyer had told him. He'd driven by the night before and seen the handsome, undecorated house with no Frosty, just sitting alone, peacefully, yet oddly so different. "I'm sorry you feel that way," Celino said sadly. "We're just trying to raise a little extra to help needy kids." Nora wanted to burst through the door and say, "Here's a check, give me the calendar!" But she didn't, because the aftermath would not be pleasant. Luther nodded with jaws clenched, eyes unflinching, and Treen began a rather dramatic re-rolling of the calendar that would now be hawked to someone else. Under the weight of his large paws, it popped and crinkled as it became smaller and smaller. Finally, it was as narrow as a broomstick, and Treen slid it back into its tube and stuck a cap on the end. Ceremony over, it was time for them to leave. "Merry Christmas," Celino said. "Do the police still sponsor that softball team for orphans?" Luther asked. "We certainly do," Treen replied. "Then come back in the spring, and I'll give you $100 for uniforms." This did nothing to appease the officers. They couldn't bring themselves to say, "Thanks." Instead, they nodded and looked at each other. Things were stiff as Luther got them out the door. Nothing said, just the irritating sound of Treen tapping the tube against his leg, like a bored cop with a nightstick looking for a head to bash. "It was only $100, Nora said sharply as she re-entered the room. Luther was peeking around the curtains, making sure they were indeed leaving. "No, dear, it was much more," he said smugly, as if the situation had been complex and only he had the full grasp of it. "How about some yogurt?" To the starving, the prospect of food erased all other thoughts. Each night they rewarded themselves with a small container of bland, fat-free, imitation fruit yogurt, which they savored like a last meal. Luther was down 7 pounds, and Nora 6. They were touring the neighborhood in a pickup truck, looking for targets. 10 of them were in the back, resting on bales of hay, singing as they rolled along. Under the quilts, hands were being held and thighs groped, but harmless fun, at least for the moment. They were, after all, from the Lutheran church. Their leader was behind the wheel, and next to her was the minister's wife, who also played the organ on Sunday mornings. The truck turned onto Hemlock, and the target quickly became obvious. They slowed as they neared the unadorned home of the Cranks. Luckily, Walt Scheel was outside wrestling with an extension cord that lacked about 8 feet in connecting the electricity from his garage to his boxwoods, around which he had carefully woven 400 new green lights. Since Crank wasn't decorating, he, Scheel, had decided to do so with extra gusto. "Are those folks home?" the driver asked Walt as the truck came to a stop. She was nodding at the Crank's place. "Yes, why?" "Oh, we're out caroling. We got a youth group here from the Lutheran Church, St. Mark's." Walt suddenly smiled and dropped the extension cord. How lovely, he thought. Crank just thinks he can run from Christmas. "Are they Jewish?" she asked. "No." "Buddhist or anything like that?" "No, not at all. Methodist, actually. They're trying to avoid Christmas this year."
"Do what?"
"You heard me." Walt was standing next to the driver's door, all smiles. "He's kind of a weird one, skipping Christmas so he can save his money for a cruise." The driver and the minister's wife looked long and hard at the Crank home across the street. The kids in the back had stopped singing and were listening to every word. Wheels were turning. "I think some Christmas carolers would do them good," Scheel added hopefully. "Go on." The truck emptied as the choir rushed onto the sidewalk. They stopped near the Crank's mailbox. "Closer," Scheel yelled. "They won't mind." They lined up near the house, next to Luther's favorite flower bed. Scheel ran to his front door and told Bev to call Frohmeyer. Luther was scraping the sides of his yogurt container when a racket commenced very close to him. The carolers struck quick and loud with the opening stanza of "God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen," and the Cranks ducked for cover. Then they darted from the kitchen, staying low, Luther in the lead with Nora on his back, into the living room and close to the front window, where thankfully the curtains were closed. The choir waved excitedly when Luther was spotted peeking out. "Christmas carolers," Luther hissed, taking a step back. "Right out there next to our junipers."
"How lovely," Nora said very quietly.
"Lovely. They're trespassing on our property. It's a setup."
"They're not trespassing."
"Of course they are. They're on our property without being invited. Someone told them to come, probably Frohmeyer or Scheele."
"Christmas carolers are not trespassers," Nora insisted, practically whispering.
"I know what I'm talking about."
"Then call your friends down at the police department."
"I might do that," Luther mused, peeking out again.
"Not too late to buy a calendar."
The entire Frohmeyer clan came running, Spike leading the pack on a skateboard, and by the time they fell in behind the carolers, the Trogdons had heard the noise and were joining the commotion. Then the Beckers, with the mother-in-law in tow and Rocky the dropout lagging behind her. Jingle Bells was next, a lively and loud rendition, no doubt inspired by the excitement being created. The choir director motioned for the neighbors to join in, which they happily did, and by the time they began Silent Night, their number had ballooned to at least 30. The carolers hit most of their notes. The neighbors couldn't have cared less. They sang loudly so that old Luther in there would squirm. After 20 minutes, Nora's nerves gave way, and she went to the shower. Luther pretended to read a magazine in his easy chair, but each carol was louder than the last. He fumed and cursed under his breath. The last time he peeked out, there were people all over his front lawn, everyone smiling and shrieking at his house. When they started with Frosty the Snowman, he went to his office in the basement and found the cognac. 8. Luther's morning routine hadn't changed in the 18 years he'd lived on Hemlock. Up at 6, slippers and bathrobe, brew the coffee, out the garage door, down the driveway where Milton the paperboy had left the Gazette an hour earlier. Luther could count the steps from the coffee pot to the newspaper, knowing they wouldn't vary by 2 or 3. Back inside, a cup with just a trace of cream, the sports section, then Metro, business, and always last the national and international news. Halfway through the obituaries, he would take a cup of coffee, the same lavender cup every day, with 2 sugars, to his dear wife. On the morning after the caroling party on his front lawn, Luther shuffled half asleep down his drive and was about to pick up the Gazette when he saw a bright collection of colors out of the corner of his left eye. There was a sign in the center of his lawn. "Free Frosty," the damn thing proclaimed, in bold black letters. It was on white poster board, reds and greens around the borders, with a sketch of Frosty chained and shackled somewhere in a basement, no doubt the Crank's basement. It was either a bad design by an adult with too much time to spare, or a rather good design by a kid with a mom looking over his shoulder. Luther suddenly felt eyes watching him. Lots of eyes. So he casually stuck the Gazette under his arm and strolled back into the house as if he'd seen nothing. He grumbled as he poured his coffee, cursed mildly as he took his chair. He couldn't enjoy sports or Metro. Even the obituaries couldn't hold his attention. Then he realized that Nora should not see the poster. She'd worry about it much more than he did. With each new assault on his right to do as he pleased, Luther was more determined to ignore Christmas. He was concerned about Nora, though. He would never break, but he feared she would. If she believed the neighborhood children were now protesting, she might collapse. He struck quickly, slinking through the garage, cutting around the corner, high-stepping across the lawn because the grass was wet and practically frozen, yanking the poster from the ground and tossing it into the utility room where he'd deal with it later. He took Nora her coffee, then settled once again at the kitchen table where he tried in vain to concentrate on the Gazette. He was angry, though, and his feet were frozen. Luther drove to work. He had once advocated closing the office from the middle of December until after January 1st. No one works anyway, he'd argued rather brilliantly at a firm meeting. The secretaries needed to shop, so they left for lunch early, returned late, then left an hour later to run errands. Simply make everyone take their vacations in December, he had said forcefully. Sort of a 2-week layoff, with pay, of course. Billings were down anyway, he'd explained, with charts and graphs to back him up. Their clients certainly weren't in their offices, so no item of business could ever be finalized until the first week of January.
Wiley and Beck could save a few bucks by avoiding the Christmas dinner and the office party. He had even passed out an article from the Wall Street Journal about a big firm in Seattle that had adopted such a policy with outstanding results, or so said the journal. It had been a splendid presentation by Luther. The firm voted 11-2 against him, and he'd stewed for a month. Only Yank Slater had hung in there with him. Luther went through the motions of another morning, his mind on last night's concert by his junipers and the protest sign in his front yard. He enjoyed life on Hemlock, got on well with his neighbors, even managing to be cordial to Walt Scheel, and was uncomfortable now being the target of their displeasure. Biff, the travel agent, changed his mood when she waltzed into his office with barely a knock. Docs, his secretary was lost in catalogs, and presented their flight and cruise tickets along with a handsome itinerary and an updated brochure on the Island Princess. She was gone in seconds, much too brief a stay to suit Luther, who, when he admired her figure in tan, couldn't help but dream of the countless string bikinis he would soon encounter. He locked his door and was soon lost in the warm blue waters of the Caribbean. For the third time that week, Luther sneaked away just before lunch and raced to the mall. He parked as far away as possible because he needed the hike, down 8 pounds now and feeling very fit, and entered through Sears with a mob of other noontime shoppers. Except Luther was there for a nap. Behind thick sunshades, he ducked into Tans Forever on the upper concourse. Daisy, with the copper skin, had been relieved by Daniela, a pale redhead whose constant tanning had only made her freckles expand and spread. She punched his card, assigned him to Salon 2, and, with all the wisdom of a highly skilled dermatologist, said, "I think 22 minutes should do it today, Luther." She was at least 30 years his junior, but had no problem addressing him simply as Luther. A kid working a temporary job for minimum wage, it never crossed her mind that perhaps she should call him Mr. Crank. "Why not 21 minutes, he wanted to snap, "or 23. He grumbled over his shoulder and went to Salon 2. The FX2000 bronze mat was cool to the touch. A very good sign, because Luther couldn't stand the thought of crawling into the thing after someone else had just left. He quickly sprayed it with Windex, wiped it furiously, then rechecked the locked door, undressed as if someone might see him, and very delicately crawled into the tanning bed. He stretched and adjusted until things were as comfortable as they would get, then pulled the top down, hit the on switch, and began to bake. Nora'd been twice and wasn't sure she'd tan again because halfway through her last session, someone rattled the doorknob and gave her a start. She blurted something, couldn't remember exactly what, due to the terror of the moment, and as she instinctively jerked upward, she cracked her head on the top of the bronze mat. Luther had been blamed for that, too. Laughing about it hadn't helped him. Before long, he was drifting away, drifting to the Island Princess with its 4 pools and dark, fit bodies lounging around, drifting to the white, sandy beaches of Jamaica and Grand Cayman, drifting through the warm, still waters of the Caribbean. A buzzer startled him. His 22 minutes were up. 3 sessions now, and Luther could finally see some improvement in the rickety mirror on the wall. Just a matter of time before someone around the office commented on his tan. They were all so envious. As he hurried back to work, his skin still warm, his stomach even flatter after another skipped meal, it began to sleet. Luther caught himself dreading the drive home. Things were fine until he turned onto Hemlock. Next door, Becker was adding more lights to his shrubs, and for spite, he was emphasizing the end of his lawn next to Luther's garage. Trogdon had so many lights you couldn't tell if he was adding more, but Luther suspected he was. Across the street, next door to Trogdon, Walt Scheel was decorating more each day, this from a guy who'd hardly hung the first strand a year ago. And now, next door, on the east side of the Cranks, Suede Kerr had suddenly been seized with the spirit of Christmas and was wrapping his scrawny little boxwoods with brand-new red and green blinking lights. The Kerrs homeschooled their brood of children and generally kept them locked in the basement. They refused to vote, did yoga, ate only vegetables, wore sandals with thick socks in the wintertime, avoided employment, and claimed to be atheists. Very crunchy, but not bad neighbors. Suede's wife, Shirley, with a hyphenated last name, had trust funds. "They've got me surrounded," Luther muttered to himself as he parked in his garage, then sprinted into the house and locked the door behind him. "Look at these," Nora said with a frown, and after a peck on the cheek, the obligatory, "How was your day?" Two pastel-colored envelopes, the obvious.
"What is it?"
he snapped. The last thing Luther wanted to see was Christmas cards with their phony little messages. Luther wanted food, which tonight would be baked fish with steamed veggies. He pulled out both cards, each with a frosty on the front. Nothing was signed. No return address on the envelope. Anonymous Christmas cards.
"Very funny," he said, flinging them onto the table.
"I thought you'd like them. They were postmarked in the city."
"It's Frohmeyer," Luther said, yanking off his tie. "He loves a practical joke."
Halfway through dinner, the doorbell rang. A couple of large bites and Luther could have cleaned his plate, but Nora was preaching the virtues of eating slowly. He was still hungry when he got to his feet and mumbled something.